Blog Talk Radio.
I didn't think it was anything.
I had pain in my abdomen. It just wouldn't go away.
I was spotting, but I had already gone through menopause.
These symptoms may be nothing, but they could be early warning signs of a gynecologic cancer, such as cervical, ovarian, or uterine cancer.
Seeing my doctor probably saved my life.
Warning signs are not the same for everyone. If you think something's wrong, see your doctor. Ask about gynecologic cancer. Call 1-800-CDC-INFO for more information. A message from the Inside Knowledge Campaign and the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services.
Good morning and welcome to Saturday Mornings with Joy Keyes. I'm your host, Joy Keyes. I want to thank you so much for listening. You can follow me on Twitter.com/Joy Keyes, and you can become a fan on Facebook. Just look up Saturday Mornings with Joy Keyes. And I would love to hear from you. Send me an email. My email is SaturdaysWithJoyKeyes@Hotmail.com. You have questions, comments, concerns, topics you want to see me cover, just send me an email. You can even tweet at me. Just do @JoyKeyes, and I will definitely try to respond to you. This morning, powerhouses on the line. We're talking about the state of young black women. As many of you know, I did a show last week about the state of young black men. I love all of them, and I think it's important that we continue the conversation. But today we're talking about young women, and I have some wonderful guests. Sophia Nelson, the national columnist, media and political commentator. You might have seen her on CNN, The Washington Post, The Griot, The Root, NPR, ABC, CBS, NBC. I can go on. She has a book out, her first book, Black Women, A Woman Redefined. You want to pick that up, and I'll be giving away free copies of the book, so you want to follow me on Twitter and on Facebook. Another powerhouse guest, professor of English and Africana Studies at the University of Pennsylvania, Dr. Salamisha Tillett. She's here on the show. You might have seen her work on The Root, and she is the co-founder of A Long Walk Home. They're a nonprofit organization using art therapy to help end violence against girls and women. My third powerhouse this morning, wow, I'm breathless already, Dr. Josephine Boyd Bradley. She's at the Department of African American and Africana Women's Studies at Clark Atlanta University. She was the first African American to integrate and graduate from a previously all-white high school, Grimsley High School in Greensboro, North Carolina. Unfortunately, my fourth guest, Sherelle Dixon, will not be able to make the call. But good morning, women. Good morning.
Good morning.
So I want to start off, let's start off in the beginning. And I say the beginning, the home, where young black women are growing up. There are some daunting stats. Most of the young black women are growing up in single-parent households. Many of the young women are growing up in households where there's abuse. Many are growing up without fathers. Many are growing up in poverty. I want to start off with Dr. Tillett with the issue of how is this affecting young women growing up in these circumstances, black women?
Well, I think, African-American girls are particularly, resilient, as we know, and especially resilient in situations where they don't have to be. So, unfortunately, I think the Black Women's Health Imperative released a report saying that over 40% of African-American women have experienced coercive sexual contact by the age of 18. What that really means is that black girls are the ones who are being most victimized and are most vulnerable. So it leads to, just growing up being a black girl in America, regardless of class in many ways, is a really precarious and vulnerable state. And a lot of policy and a lot of attention isn't given to this population. So we just have a big crisis on one hand and a lack of attention given to them at the same time.
Sophia, you talk about the issue of sexual abuse in your book, Black Woman Redefined, and how that's affecting. Well, why don't you tell listeners some of the stuff you talk about there in that chapter?
Yeah, I co-sign what was just said, but I'll amplify it in this way. One of the things that we did in Black Woman Redefined was I wanted some original survey data because there isn't very much, as the good professor just said there. There's not data on us as black women because we're largely ignored. We're still invisible. And I thought the irony of all of that, of course, Joy, is that here we are at a time where we have this fabulous first lady and Michelle Obama, who's African American, and everything we'd want our daughters to grow up to be and everything we in this generation have aspired to be. And yet when you look at the statistics that you started out with, whether it's the poverty rates, whether it's the single head of households with black women leading those over 60%, the large number of our young sisters growing up without fathers in the home, and many other deficits, if you will, it's a bit ironic. And so what we talk about in Black Woman Redefined is the whole black woman. And my goal, I just came back from Bennett College, as I was saying to you all when we were on the break before the show, that I had an opportunity to spend time with 600-plus beautiful young women from age 17 to age about 22, you know, in that range at college age. And I had a chance to sit and listen with them and dialogue with them. And while they are our best and brightest, and they are certainly resilient, as was stated, the things they're dealing with, the challenges that are both domestic in terms of how they've come up in their family structures, many of the young women I talk to have very strong families in terms of, you know, their moms, their aunts, their grandmothers, but that male presence is lacking, and that has a huge impact on self-esteem, on who these young ladies date and allow themselves to be with. One young woman who was 18 said, and I almost fell off my chair, "Well, I put up with a lot of things from my boyfriend because I don't want to be alone." To which I looked at her and said, "But wait, you're 18. You know, wait.
Yes.
No,
yes.
You know, you're 18. Don't be in a hurry." And
right.
Yet,
I want to bring
here.
Okay, I'm sorry. I want to bring Dr. Bradley into the conversation because also starting in a home, I want to talk about the issue of literacy. There's a huge gap in literacy for children. I know in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania, there's a 10%, maybe 12% illiteracy rate. The importance of reading to children. Dr. Bradley, you have an amazing experience with your education. Talk to me about the statistics dealing with the importance of reading to young children and how that can affect their development.
Well, one of the things that I think we see quite a bit, and I see it especially at the college level, is the lack of interest in reading. And so I think not reading to children brings that about. And the other, for some reason, we want to spend kids spend most of their time watching television. And so when by the time they get to school or college, they still perceive that TV and computers will answer all their questions for them, and they don't have any need. And I think one of the things that parents can do, as well as community leaders, is to stress the relevancy and importance of being able to read and understand what you read. Kids can read some. You know, we don't see a lack of the ability to read, but the problem seems to be the ability to comprehend and understand what they read. They read, like at the college level in high school, a lot of times they read to pass an exam. And so they don't read to understand. They just read.
Don't really read to digest. Do you see that, Dr.
Right.
Tillett, in your experience as a professor at University of Penn?
You know, I think by the time they get to Penn, a lot of them have spent, you know, time in English class, and they do read, but they may not feel like they may not have been exposed to like African American literature, African American women's literature. And I think to tie the idea of literacy and the other issue of violence together, you know, African American women writers, someone like Maya Angelou or Toni Morrison, they really used literacy and writing to tell stories of black girls who have been violated by their families or by their community. And so I think, again, just reiterating, literacy is so important because for African Americans, it has been one of the primary tools to kind of get out of our social economic conditions or at least tell, speak truth to power. So if people can't read, they can't write, and they can't really express what they're going through, and they can't kind of, you know, give us a broader understanding of how not just one girl's voice and many girls' voices are being lost. So I think the literacy issue is important just for mobility, right, social mobility, but it's also important for self-expression. And that's how we know this crisis has existed for so long in the African-American community around violence against girls and women, because black women writers have really told us so. But now, with the kind of decrease in tension in literacy in public schools and in different communities, where are these stories being told? How are Black girls getting their voices across? And I think that's something we really should pay attention to as well.
Definitely. I want to pick up a call here. You're calling from 317 area code. Did you have a question?
Yeah. Hello. It's Steve from Indianapolis. I think you're, you make some good valid points. It's just, you know, people identities are lost here in America from the European culture. And it's just a lot of riffraff and, you know, between, you know, the different groups and sects out there. And you see other groups come in and do very well in America, but it's just, that's just the perception of the media. Trying to change the media, you have to be, you know, almost probably a trillionaire to try to change the media. You have to buy them out. They're not going to change. You know, they're set in their ways.
Brother, I want to bring Sophia in on that conversation. Thank you so much for calling in. Sophia, I know you can talk to the issue of how the media portrays African-American women.
Yeah, you know, this is my big rant and why.
Yes.
But it is, he brings up a very critical point that I was trying to explain to our young sisters about their context. I know that in this new modern time, in the age of Obama, right, in the post-racial America, which does not exist, but in that context, we are told to forget about our history. We are told to get over it already and to kind of just assimilate and move on. But he makes a very critical point that the damage, the structural damage done to the Black family unit is huge. And one of the reasons that we still continue to see the deficits that we do in the Black marriage rates, in the divorce rates, in the notion we were talking about the sexual abuse and the violence and all the many things that go on within our community still in far too large and disproportionate numbers has to do with our context from slavery through Reconstruction, Jim Crow, and through the Civil Rights era. And the enormous soul damage, as I like to call it, that was done to Black people. Now, that's not to say that our ancestors, right, didn't do a good job coming through that. They did.
Mm-hmm,
but as he
mm-hmm.
mentions, when you look at Jewish people and other cultures here, they thrive. And why do they thrive? Because their families are intact. And I think to the point of what the media does, the media continues to exploit and to put forth a narrative of us as Black women in particular. It's ironic that we're invisible on the one hand, right? But then we're so visible in these horrific ways, basketball wives, housewives of Atlanta's, mm-hmm. bad girls.
Well, that's, Sophia, that's what people were talking about in the chat room. Somebody mentioned about the effects of reality TV shows. Dr. Brad, I want to bring you in on this because you're heading up the Africana Women's Studies. What do you see in terms of a trend? Do you see the trend improving in terms of how Black women are portrayed in the media? Maybe let's even talk about books, the books that we were able to purchase for our children. I think the books that I've been able to purchase for my daughter from when she was born, she's 17 now, till the present, have improved. There are many more choices for me as a parent to present to her showing positive views of Black women. But in terms of the media, I still see very few. When she looks in Vogue, when she looks in a lot of fashion magazines, Teen Vogue, unless it's Essence or Ebony or Jet. But Dr. Bradley, what's your opinion about that? Is it improving the view of Black women in media or is it declining?
I think it's, in many ways, it's declining. But I also have another view on that. And I think that we oftentimes say it's because of someone else, but I think as Black folks need to start looking inward in terms
Amen.
Of what can we do ourselves to improve what happens. And I know when I hear Black parents say, well, I don't want my child to learn about Black history or culture because it's irrelevant, that's scary because
Absolutely.
What that says is that we've bought into this notion
mm-hmm.
that we as Black people, and especially Black women,
mm.
are unimportant. So we have learned to reinforce that habit. And some ways we need to look at how can we as a people, and especially women, since it's now women's turn to control what happens, I think, in the Black community in a different way. And I don't mean that negatively, but I think Black women have the power to ensure that things can change within the community. And to I think part of the answer to that is learning to love ourselves. And I think that when we can do that and not be, you know, not say to the school system, I don't want my child to learn about that. Or if you get a major in African-American studies or Africana women's studies, you're not going to be able to get a job. And so,
and Joy, if I could interject quickly to her point, she's absolutely right. And I talk about this in the book that I interviewed someone who was one of my African American study professors when I was in college. He's now at Johns Hopkins, Dr. Floyd Hayes, and he talked about how the Jewish mantra was always never forget when they came out of the Holocaust. When black people came out of slavery, our mantra was we must forget. We don't want to remember that. We want to assimilate. We want to be Americans. We want to be embraced by this culture that has mistreated us, miseducated us, maligned us, et cetera, et cetera. And so if you think about it, even today if you have conversation, and I'd love to hear what my two colleagues here think, with our young folks, the goal is I want to go work in a big corporation versus starting my own corporation. I want to go to Harvard versus Howard. I want to do the white thing that says I'm approved versus doing that thing in my own community or in my own family context.
Let me bring Dr. Tillett. Let me bring Dr. Tillett in this and talk about the issue of hip-hop. We talk about music and its portrayal of young black women and the words and the language they use. In your book, even, Sophia, you talk about Jay-Z and how when he was reading his words on paper, how he was so shocked by them. Dr. Tillett, let's talk about the effects of music, because kids are constantly listening to music. Young women are listening to music in their earphones. They almost get hit by a car across the street. And how is music hypnotizing the children with the effects of music?
I would like to just respond to the first point about slavery and the kind of amnesia about slavery versus Jewish Americans or European Jews. I think, and then I'll get into the hip-hop thing, I think it's a kind of a misreading of the past. I think that African Americans simply forgot slavery in order to move on. There was a systematic kind of governmental institution, Jim Crow itself, or segregation itself, put in place to so the North and South kind of reconciled at the expense of African Americans. So honestly, it's only because of African Americans that we have, whether it's historians or writers or individual people, that we even remember slavery today. So even though it's not as, I guess, you know, the memory of slavery is not necessarily alive and well in the way that we would like today, it is because of African Americans and the kind of resilience on the part of African Americans to keep slavery even part of any national discourse. In Philadelphia alone, there was a memorial opened in December to commemorate the the resistance of enslaved African Americans who worked for George Washington. So that model, I feel like, when we compare African Americans to Jewish Americans, it's always unfair, and it kind of gives African Americans a sense of complete deficit, right? Whereas, like, there were a whole bunch of reasons why, there were actual policies put in place, and the United States itself helped keep the memory of the Holocaust alive in many ways, or at least the memory of the tragedy of the Holocaust alive.
My opinion is that, like you said, in terms of there was an institutional process in place and policy to stop education. It's not that when I talk to young people, they are not aware of the history of slavery as much as we think they are. But it's not that they don't want to, but it's not taught in school. I didn't learn about
the
story of slavery in school.
And I want to know what the doctors think about, the professors think about this, but because there's a generational disconnect, and I call it cross-generational talk. And I agree with, I forget who said this, but basically what she said was, we need to look at us and what we did, and we're not educating our young people about the things they should know. That's why they don't know. We're not having the conversations that the four of us are having right now and sitting down with our young women and men and saying, this is who you are, this is your legacy, this is what you come out of, you're better. We don't talk like that anymore.
Yes.
Well, Dr.
Bradley,
parents are afraid? Yeah, I want to, Dr. Bradley, do you think parents are afraid to talk to their children about slavery because they don't want to burden them and make them, you know, hypersensitive? I mean, what is your opinion, Dr. Bradley, about that?
I think that it's about wanting to forget that it happened and wanting to believe that we have now been accepted into the mainstream. But what I was going to say was, I was teaching over at Morehouse and had a class, and we were talking about segregation. And one of the students stopped me. He said, "Well, what is it?" You know, and I'm sort of saying, "Don't you know?" He said, "My parents will not talk to me about it. Or my grandparents," mm-hmm. "because anytime I bring it up, they tell me that's not something we need to talk about." And so I think we have pushed forward with this notion that once civil rights acts and all those things occurred, that that was the solution. And because segregation was so painful, we take the approach that if we don't talk about it, the pain will go away. So in many ways, we as black folks are still in a state of denial.
And that's what Dr. Hayes said in my chapter 2, where I talk about from slavery to the White House, because the context of that whole chapter is to educate our younger sisters as to the fact that these images that they have of us being these angry, you know, overbearing, over-sexualized, aggressive beasts, and that's basically how we're portrayed on any given day, you know, they don't just come out of thin air. They come out of a long and painful history of narratives about black women that are not flattering, that go back to slavery. And this movie, The Help, which is something I won't delve into unless you want to, Joy, that's a whole other discussion for another day.
That's a whole other discussion.
Right.
But
so,
I
won't go there because I'll get worked up, but, you're running this, so I'll let you run it.
Well, I want to move to some health issues. I want to talk about physical health. We talked a lot right now just about mental issues in a sense. I think it's a mental health issue because we talk about what other people think about us, but we internalize a lot of these images. We internalize the portrayal of us, and we kind of take on those roles. Well, you know what? I am going to be the angry black woman. Well, you know, I am going to be, you know, big. Me being big is not bad. But so that brings me to the point about obesity. According to the Black Women's Health website, letsmove.org, nearly 1 in 3 children in America are overweight and obese. The numbers are even higher in African American and Hispanic communities. Nearly 40% of our black children are overweight or obese. I want to bring in Dr. Tilla in this. What can we do to combat this situation?
Well, one, I would like to just applaud, you know, Michelle Obama or First Lady Michelle Obama and the efforts to kind of really counter obesity in America. But really, it's an issue that affects, as you just said, disproportionately affects African-American girls. So whether the issue is seen as such, it is a real epidemic in our communities. And I know that the film Precious was quite a controversy in terms of, how it was received by different, writers and critics and constituents. But I do think there's another example of how black girls are constantly overlooked or invisible. And when a girl like Precious gets put on the screen, controversial as it is, it's another way of telling the story of how black girls are just not seen in America and not seen by other black people as well. So I think in terms of the physical health stuff, it's all connected to, you know, it's all intertwined, mental health, physical health, the abuse of black girls, they're all connected. So I just think, you know, the desire to end obesity and to really talk about, you know, food deserts in our communities and the ways in which, I live in Newark, New Jersey, for example, and it's just very difficult to find a healthy grocery store.
Oh, fresh food grocery stores. They're extremely expensive. I mean, in my neighborhood, fortunately, there are a couple of food trucks that I can think of I could walk to, but there are many areas mm-hmm. where people had to, you know, in terms of policy almost, press the cities to,
yes.
you know, provide areas maybe where a truck could be or opening a supermarket, but then not just open a supermarket, the issue also becomes
yeah.
affordability. So we have a lot okay. of corner stores. I can go get some Hubs. I can go get some chips. I can go, the other day, this is a perfect example. I was so upset. Other day on the train, a young boy, maybe 3 years old, had a bottle of grape soda. It was 8 o'clock in the morning, and his sister, I'm assuming it was a sister or a relative with him, had a bottle of Coca-Cola. She was probably 12, and the mom was sitting there. Took it out the bag. I wanted to strangle her. What are they doing drinking grape soda and Coca-Cola at 8 o'clock in the morning? I mean, I grew up in a household. We had milk, juice, and water. That was it. So I think there's an option. I mean, water is only a dollar a bottle nowadays, so if you talk about expense. Sophia, what do you think about this?
Well, I think people, you know, we're talking about it, and the bulk of the people that we're talking about who do it, no one tells them what's good and what's not good in terms mm-hmm. of eating. So they eat what, and I think as someone said earlier, what they can afford and what they think. The danger for me around this whole topic is are we also, in addition to talking about what constitutes good health, also saying that unless you're this trophy woman, you have no place. And that bothers me because we have this rate of anorexic and so forth already. And are we reinforcing that?
Yes, because
that's what
I want to take a call. I want to take a call, Dr.
Okay.
Bradley. I want to take a call here.
Yeah.
Good morning. You're calling from 626 area code.
All right. Yeah, this is Covina, man. I just wanted to say something real quick. I'm really enjoying the conversation. Too bad it's only 20 minutes more on the show. But I just had to say, it seems like with when young black men have been raised as far as a generation. Learning from hip hop, they seem to have been raised to attract black women by becoming less socially acceptable in the mainstream society, and we see the statistics results of that. And it seems like nowadays, it seems like the black women have almost the reverse. They seem to be more socially acceptable. Even in a mammy state, or even a reality show like Hell's Kitchen, where the black woman is on there, acting a fool. Well, it seems to be more.
Well, thank you. Where are you
acceptable.
Calling from?
From? Los Angeles area in California.
I'm gonna have to pause you for a second, brother. Let the panel to respond to your couple statements there. He brought up a couple issues. He talked about relationships between black men and black women, and he brought about, again, back to the media issue, how women are portrayed in the media. I want to bring Sophia in about, let's move to the relationship issue. Young women and how they're taught to find a mate. I mean, nobody sat down with me when I was a young lady and said, he should be this, he should be that, don't go for that. I mean, they tried to warn me. I know my dad and I had a conflict. Oh, my God, I was 16. I wanted to go out with a 19-year-old. My dad was like, what the heck? Okay, he said something else, but I'm going to say, what the heck does this 19-year-old want to have to do with a 16-year-old? All he wants is sex. You don't know what you're talking about. No, you can't go out. Oh, it was a huge argument. I thought he was the worst. My dad was the worst person. But you know what? He saved me. And I actually wish he had saved me, or my mom had saved me, in other circumstances where they should have made the guy come up into the house and check him out. It would have saved me a lot of trouble. Sophia, talk to me about this problem with black men and black women, young black women, relationships.
There's a lot of discussion going on right now, and I thank the caller for the point. A lot of discussion going on right now about black love and black relationships. As we know, we've got my book out, Black Women Redefined, which is basically going back to the point that someone made earlier, that we as black women, the only thing we can control is us and what we do with us and our personhood. I'm waiting for a brother to write Black Man Redefined instead of writing a lot of books about what's wrong with the sisters and what they're not doing. And, Ralph
Banks.
Well,
I think Kevin Powell did a nice job. Kevin Powell has a nice book, Black Male Handbook. Also, Hill Harper has a nice book out to young men and young women about how they can
develop themselves.
We're
talking about now. I'm talking about, Steve Harvey's book and a number of other books that really all have the same narrative. Like Ralph Richard Banks' new book about his marriage for white people is basically telling sisters to abandon black male relationships because they're so dysfunctional, to get to the point of your question, and they should turn to white men to save them, which really irks me, and I date a white man, so I'm saying that's a ridiculous
Let me bring Dr. Tillett in. Dr. Tillett, what do you think about that?
Well, okay.
Which part? The Banks
about
book
dating,
white,
dating outside the race as a solution to getting married. That is brought up recently.
No, I'm saying
in the media.
We should open. Let me just clarify though before she answers. I'm not saying we shouldn't expand our options. Of course we should, but that is not the solution to what ails black men and black women. Is what I'm saying. You follow what I mean?
I agree. I agree with you. I don't have any problem with
racial
relationships. Go ahead,
Dr. I'll answer quickly to that. I mean, one, I think there's a New York Times book review of Banks' book by Imani Perrier, a friend of mine and a colleague at Princeton University. And so she has she has a wonderful review of the book, but she also talks about the ways in which Banks has a really structural analysis of the problems between why black women have such low rates or the reasons why black women aren't getting married really have very little to do with black women and more to do with, our choices, right? And so his option or his solution of opening our choices, on one hand, may be a good thing, but the other point I think Imani brings up in her review is that we still need to deal with the structural issues. Why are there so few African-American men who are eligible for marriage? And that's another, and that has to do with mass incarceration, high unemployment, high school truancy. There's a whole bunch of reasons why. So that should be the solution, focusing on the social reasons and the political reasons why African-American men aren't as eligible as they once were. But in the work that we do with A Long Walk Home and our girl empowerment program called Girlfriends, I think the issue should also be about giving black girls the tools to understand their sexuality and to define themselves in their own terms. So much, I think, of the debate, when I see young women entering college, they're already operating with a deficit model. They know the statistics. It's seven black women to one black man on a college campus, and it makes them feel like if they don't get one person, then there's something wrong with them. And
there's
I think
wrong.
That we need to really redefine.
Dr. Bradley, let me bring Dr. Bradley into the conversation. I don't want to miss her. She definitely has a lot of knowledge, and she's also on the college campus, and she sees the young women at Clark Atlanta University. Are you seeing that similar problem with young women holding on to the one man because they're afraid that if they don't, then they're not going to find another man?
That's part of it. We just had a focus group with young women about their relationships and what they were looking for. And a lot of them have ideas about men, period, that are somewhat frightening in the sense of this perfect man is going to ride in on this white horse and save them. But one of the things that was interesting, when the group leader asked them, well, what do you look for? And one of the girls said, well, most of them said they wanted to know how much money the guy had or how, you know, what he was doing in school, what his parents were doing. And none of it really got at what is this person about. And that was the part that I found most disturbing, is that they're not looking at the person for who he is, but for this imaginary person. And I guess it goes back to media again, that we see on media.
Joy, ladies, we're going over time. Do you guys mind continuing talking
Thank
for
you.
A couple more minutes?
No.
Sure. That's fine.
You're okay.
I also think that...
Sophia, go ahead. You were going to say something?
Yeah, I wanted to say that I just wrote that book. That book is called Black Woman Redefined. This isn't a book promo. This is beyond a book. The book's done well. It's won awards. It's doing great, so I don't really care about
that. It's a great book. I'm giving away free copies. It's a great book.
But what I care about is what we're discussing and why I did this. This book had commissioned research. I didn't go interview people and look at the census. We got two of the best pollsters in the country, spent tens of thousands of dollars, you all can appreciate this, on research to talk to young, not only sisters, but to talk to brothers, to talk to whites, Latinos, et cetera, to get a full view of what it is people are thinking about black women. How do black women think about themselves? And the professor is absolutely correct that the black woman, one of the biggest issues that we have is we're not really having the conversations with our young women. If we're going to have real girl talk here, adult talk, we're not having the conversations around our sexuality, our self-esteem, the sexual abuse. In our survey, very high-earning, professional, demographically diverse in terms of generations, whatever, almost 50% of the sample, Chapter 7, is about the sexual abuse that we're not talking about that's going on with our young black girls, teens, and young women. And so... the reason
well, I had Angela Shelton on. Angela Shelton, Sophia, let me just make a comment about that. I had Angela Shelton on in her movie about searching for Angela Shelton. She's a white woman. But what she found is she went around and searching for other women with the same name, and almost all of them had dealt with the issue of sexual abuse or are dealing with the issue of domestic violence. She herself, she's a white woman.
I'm not saying it's an all-women problem, but our discussion today is on young black women, so I want to stay focused there.
Young black women are one in three young black women are dealing with abuse. So if one in three black women are dealing with sexual abuse, that means black men also have to deal with that issue. And I think that's another thing, is that it's not discussed across the sex line. That if you're a young black man and you're in a relationship with a young black woman, there's a chance that she might have been abused. And that's a conversation you might want to talk. And that connects with Dr. Bradley's point of getting to know your partner.
I think it's bigger than the conversation between the girl and the boy. I think it's an issue for our leaders to really address. I mean, we focus so much in terms of, as race people, let's say, or when we focus on African-American issues, it usually and historically and presently focuses on issues that affect African American men. And we don't do enough focusing on, and African American women do that, right? We're the ones, African American men and African American women do that. And I think with issues like sexual assault, issues like domestic violence, single mother households, I mean, Black women who are single parents are the most adversely affected by this recession. That's a given. That's just known. Everyone knows that. And yet, the way in which we talk about the recession, for example, is seen as an issue that's only affecting men or disproportionately affecting men, when it's really affecting single Black mothers are the most vulnerable. So when we're, so it's like there's so many issues that we overlook when it comes to African American women that are really core issues for our community. And so if an African American girl is like, you know, one in three, or as I said before, 40% really of African American women have experienced sexual coercion by the age of 18, the impact of that on one generation, on one household, on one community is so great that it really should be a top three, top two issue when we talk about racial justice, and we just don't do that. The other reason why it should be part of that is because when we talk about mass incarceration, data shows us that 60% of women who end up being imprisoned have been sexually assaulted.
Have been abused or also dealing with addiction issues.
Addiction,
Dr. Bradley,
which is another, exactly. So I just, I don't know, I'm just going to reiterate what Sophia was saying about why this needs to be part of the conversation, and a healthy sexuality also needs to be part of our solution.
Yeah, Joy, I hope that we can...
Go ahead, Sophia.
I was just going to say, Joy, I hope that, you know, when we have more time, we can actually really just kind of drill down on this. I think that we're also, there's so many topics being thrown out for discussion here. It's a fruitful discussion, but I think when you start talking about the issue of sexual abuse and the impact of Black women in particular, and again, that's my concern with the absence of Black men, of fathers and positive role models, et cetera, the things that are going on and why we're having difficulty with relationships is a much deeper conversation than what we're going to be able to do justice to. So I just kind of want to, I kind of am going to step back a little bit, because to do this justice and to really have the kind of discussions we need to have around this, we kind of need to have a focused topical discussion. You know what I mean? Like, we should talk about sexual abuse and sexuality at one point, and then maybe we should deal with the educational issues and whatever, so just so that we can really get the listeners into it, because I think it's so critical that our young women know that they can talk about this, and so many of them are not talking about it. And what we found in the research was the young men and men across other demographics said the biggest challenge they had, and I'm talking about Black men now, with Black women, was that they felt that dating white women and others was less burdensome, their words, and that they were nicer, they smiled more, they were more fun. And what the sister's response was, well, yeah, I'd be like that too if I didn't have all this
double
stuff,
burden,
you know, that I have to deal with. Yeah, that's, you're right, the white girls are nicer, they are happier, whatever. But one big thing that was a shocker, 58% of Black men in our sample said, in the quantitative analysis said, listen, we know that Black women have been hurt at the hands of Black men. We get that. I thought it was a startling and stunning admission of, we get why the sisters are hurt or having challenges,
but they don't
want to
deal with it.
We don't want to deal with it. And that's the conversation I'm interested in having. I'm not interested in these marriage for white folks and all this other stuff. I'm interested in, what do we do to heal the very damaged, hurt relationship that's been fractured with Black women and Black men, starting in the family?
Well, I
want to
bring Dr. Bradley in on that. Sophia, I want to bring Dr. Bradley. What is the solution for the hurt that Black women are feeling because they are Black? That's one strike, so to speak, against them. Then there are women. We have to deal with the issue of sexism. We haven't talked about that. The issue of sexism, no matter what race you are, as a woman, you are still below a man in this culture. So, Dr. Bradley, talk to me about solutions that we can do.
Yeah. What are the solutions? And it's something that we, that our department did. And we have this program, Africana Women's Studies, which is the only graduate program in the United States that deals with Black women specifically. And one of the things we just did was a conference, a meeting between males and females around this whole issue of relationship. And one of the brothers made a comment that he really wanted to have time with his child, but his mother refused to let him do that because of their relationship. And he was pointing out that the male and female relationship interfere with how they then relate to their children. And I think we need to really look at that. I think one of the ways is that we have to acknowledge as leaders and, you know, that we need to go ahead and have these open discussions between black men and black women. We don't do that. We talk about each other, but we don't talk to each other or we don't talk with each other. And it's always the negative. And I think we need to start helping them to identify what the positives are. And I think the texts, the written texts that we have, help to do that. Not the ones that talk about all these absent, you know, these relationships that are not healthy, but we have texts out there that we need to look at and give to our students to talk about what may constitute healthy relationships. If they don't exist, then we need to write them or we need to help them write them. And I think it starts with an honest, open relationship with all of us, intergenerational, total. And how can we learn? When you see somebody who's been, you know, a couple that's been married 7 to 8 years, what happened? What constitutes that length of time? And we don't look at those things. So I think we need to have those intergenerational conversations. And it means that we as faculty and those in leadership have to step back and really listen to them and not always assess or think we know where they are.
Yeah, I think that's right.
I think that's important. Also, I think it's important to talk to the young people. On the show last week with the young black men, we're adults. We're all adults here. We're all college educated. We're talking amongst ourselves. But I think it's really important. That's why I wanted to have Sherelle on from Start Strong, is talking to the young people about what they think, about where they think they are, about where are they going. Because we have one perception, and the young people, and I say young people between the age of 15 and 25, have a completely different perception because of the generational gap. So that is very important, Dr. Bradley. I think talking across generations, but also listening as adults to young people if you're out there. And I want to close the show with the issue of mentorship. The importance of mentorship, I think what Dr. Tillett is doing with her organization. Sophia, I think your book is a form of mentorship, and Dr. Bradley, you heading your department is a form of mentorship. That is so important that if we're up here in the chat room, I see them yakking about, you know, relationships and money and weight and all this stuff. My question to you in the chat room and any listener, what are you doing in the next week to help a young person dispel the myths, improve their self-esteem, and show them the light, so to speak? What are you doing in the next week? I will challenge you to become a mentor the next week to some young person on your block so that that the next generation can have better self-esteem, have more dreams, know that there are things that they can dream for, and know that there's support for them. I'm challenging you to do that. I want to ask Sophia, closing words in 30 seconds. What are your closing words to young black women in the future?
Of all the advice I could give to young sisters, as I did at Bennett, mentorship and having what I call a love council of advisors around you throughout your entire life is the single most important thing you can do well for yourself to help you live a successful and happy life.
Dr. Tillett, your words for the young black women in the future?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's to us to, like you said, listen to them. I think we should be developing programs and institutions where they are also leading us, not us just leading them. So to the young black girl, I would just say speak up, speak confidently and bravely, and find people who will listen to you and help you become who you want to be.
Dr. Bradley, your closing words for young black women in the future?
To have faith in themselves that's real, and to do away with all this stuff that we see on the media, because that's not who we are. And that might mean going back to just learn and read and understand that it's okay to be black and to love their blackness.
Definitely. I want to end with a quote. This is one of my favorite quotes. It's sitting right above my desk. It's also in Sophia's book. This is Marianne Williamson's A Return to Love. Our deepest fear is not that we are inadequate. Our deepest fear is that we are powerful beyond measure. It is our light, not our darkness, that most frightens us. We ask ourselves, who am I to be brilliant, gorgeous, talented, fabulous? Actually, who are you not to be? You are a child of God. Your playing small does not serve the world. As we let our light shine, we unconsciously give other people permission to do the same. As we liberate it from our own fear, our presence automatically liberates others.
So I want to end with that and encourage everyone again to, in the next week, if you don't like what's going on with young black people in this country, take a moment to mentor them and care for them and be there for them. I want to thank all the guests for being on the show this morning. We had a great show. We went a little over time, but thank you so much for being on the show. Have a wonderful Saturday.
Thank you so much.
Thank you. Stay tuned. I'll be doing the show about ovarian cancer, so stay tuned for that show. That's at 12 p.m. Eastern. The call-in number is 646-929-0360. I hope you stay tuned. Have a wonderful Saturday. Again, thank you to all the guests for calling in, and definitely we can continue to talk about this for hours and hours and hours. But thank you, everybody, for calling in and listening.